阅读、科技、旅行，生活可以很大，对话设计、学习思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客狗熊有话说，一听就停不下来的哦。Hello， 你好，欢迎收听独立知识型脱口秀狗熊有话说 Bear Talk， 我是大狗熊。今天这期节目呢是一期英文的访谈，嘉宾呢来自于澳洲，在全球知名的一家财务软件公司 Xero 工作，他的名字呢叫做 Zach Henderson， Harrison， 他的全名应该是叫 Zach Harrison 啊 ，sorry。那么 Zach 呢是 Xero 这家公司的设计系统经理，产品设计经理，Product System Manager， 那么 Design Manager。那么他下面呢管着十几个产品设计师。这期节目呀是我和他做的一期访谈，关于设计系统这样的一个概念的讨论 ，design system。所以这期节目可能会对于设计师朋友会比较有帮助，或者说想要在大一点的公司从事产品设计工作的朋友呢，可能会觉得会比较感兴趣。如果你觉得并不对这个话题特别感兴趣的话呢，可以考虑跳过这期节目啊。但如果你想在这个领域工作，想在设计领域工作，想在技术行业工作啊，想在大一点的公司工作的话啊，那么这期节目会对你非常的有价值。这也是狗熊有话说Bear Talk 我在狗熊有话说之外做的一个全新的英文播客的第一期节目啊。其实我还没有正式把这个节目放出来，它的这个新节目，这档新节目叫做 Bear Academy。那么主题呢是关于设计效率和科技方面话题的讨论，那么会有一些本地的嘉宾，也会有一些个人的一些独立的见解和观点，但主要的特点就是说它会在全英文的平台发布，那么更多呢是面向于国外的一些听友。如果你对刚刚我说的这三个话题感兴趣啊，就是 designTechnology and productivity， 如果对这三个话题感兴趣的话也记得订阅哦，搜索订阅一下 Bear Academy B-E-A-R， 然后 Academy 就是 A-C-A-D-E-M-Y。 OK， 那么废话不多说，我们就开始今天这期节目吧。 Hello and welcome to Bear Academy Podcast. Here we talk things about designProductivity and technology. I'm your host, Bear, a UX designer who lives in Auckland, New Zealand. I'm going to get a cup of coffee, and very likely, the coffee shop I'm going is using Xero.For accounting. Xero is a company with more than 3,000 employees, 2 million users all over the world. In 2014 and 2015, Xero was identified by Forbes as world's most innovative growth company. Their design team is an army of 57 product designers, 13 researchers,Two content strategists work from Australia, New Zealand, and other parts of the world. Today, I'm going to talk to Zach Sanderson Harris, Product Design Manager, Design Manager in Systems at Xero. The topic of the chat with Zach will be Design System.A design system is the single source of truth, which groups all the elements that will allow the teams to design, realize, and develop a product. So a design system is not a deliverable, but a set of deliverables. It will evolve constantly with the product, the tools, and the new technologies.
Could you also a little bit introduction, a little bit about yourself and what you are doing for Vozero? Yeah, for the context.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, cool. I'm Zach Sanderson Harris. I'm design manager for the systems team here at Xero, based over in Melbourne. I've been working in design systems for about 6 years now, originally in Wellington, New Zealand, before moving here last year.
Wow. Yeah. And also about the design system, about the design team, I'm also quite curious about for Xero. It's a large company. So I presume there are a lot of designers, and you mentioned you work for design system team. Is that a lot of other designers from different teams? Could you briefly introduce about the structure of the design team?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment, there's around 80 or so designers at Xero, and they're split into different portfolios, and each portfolio looks after a bunch of different products. And so the designers within their portfolio will work with one or more product teams. And so they'll work closely with engineering and product owners and product managers.
Yep.
And then the Zooey team is separate from that. So you can think of Zooey as, or we think of Zooey as its own product, sort of an internal serving product. And we have 6 designers in our team, 8 engineers, a product owner, and a product manager. And so we support teams. Yeah, it's a big team. It's close to doubled in the last year. So we're really lucky. Lucky to see it grow and have more choice people to work with.
Well, that's really interesting to know that, because according to my previous experience of my understanding about design system, is a product for designers and developers, and majorly maintained by designers. But you introduced you let me know that it's not only designers for your team. There are also developers and product owners. So yeah, that's quite interesting. And so it sounds like just a complete product. It's not just in the middle way, but it's like a product with a proper team, and it's not only the concepts or the design, but it's also involving some implementation. Is that does that make sense, or is this something?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to have a cross-discipline team like that, because you know we're serving product teams, and they've got engineers and designers and product folks, and so we want to be able to collaborate closely with them as much as we can. And I think if a system is sort of owned just by engineering or just design, then it's naturally going to lean into one of those disciplines, and I don't think that's certainly not how we see the role of Zooey. It's really to create the coded components, of course, that have thoughtful design thinking behind them, and then design tooling. So to do that well, we really need a cross-discipline team. And it means that, you know, the design decisions we make for the system have the technology and engineering considerations taken into account. We're really lucky to have a cross-discipline team like that. And we work really, really closely together.
Yeah, well, that's impressive. And also, I think that will be better for you to get a buy-in from developers in other teams. Like they can know what's the value of design system you can deliver. Yeah, that sounds really impressive. And because you mentioned Zooey, and for the context, could you introduce a little bit about the design system at Xero. So I already know that it's the design system we call in Xero, Zoe. So what so what it is and what's the function? How it works.
Yeah, great place to start. So Zoe is Xero's design system. Zoe stands for Xero User Interface. And it's what Xero product teams use to collaborate across disciplines and teams to build Xero products. So it's made up of coded components and systems, documentation, usage guidelines for the systems, and tooling and support. So within those systems, we provide fundamentals like color, typography, spacing, layout. We provide components, so buttons, data tables, page headers, for example, and page compositions. So those would be typical page layouts that in our circumstance come with a little bit of baked in responsive behavior. Then along with this stuff, we provide guidance. So like, hey, here's a page header. Here's how you might use it. Here's maybe a place or a way that, you know, you might not use it, and here's an alternative. So a bit of best practice guidelines, code snippets, so that teams can use these components, for example, in their product, and then the tooling. So a Figma library will have a page header in it that designers can use for their mocks and prototypes. So we focus on the accessibility and performance and interaction design of all of these things, so that when teams use them, a lot of that thinking's already been done and they don't have to keep making those decisions over and over and over again and I guess like reinventing the wheel. So it means that teams can pick up this, think of it like a foundation, I suppose, and quickly get a product spun up that uses Zoe that then gives them way more time to, I suppose, like innovate and experiment on things that are specific to their customer problem. And then the last part of Zoe, I suppose, is like our support and contribution model. So how do we help these teams use Zoe? And how do we help them feed back into the system?
Yep.
Yeah. Does it make sense?
Yeah, yeah. That totally makes sense. And it's really great to know that it provides not only the design library, like the pattern library, and also like code and how you can, and also some support support system that can let other teams understand and to use the design system to help them work. Yeah, it's really great to know. Two questions came to my mind while you introduced Zoe. One thing is that I know Xero as a large company with different teams and products and some online products, and probably there are some platforms with history. I know, do you know what I mean? It feels like it's some legacy format the, for example, like for website, we have WC2 and what's the name of the it's kind of like a different format and different structure, and how it sounds to me that to maintain a design system to provide all the latest updates of those formats for the different platforms sounds like really a large amount of work. So is it something quite similar as what I assumed? Is it some kind of
Yeah, it's a really good question. So in our system we use React, so there's definitely going to be technical considerations for the products that can consume the system, right? Like they need to be built on similar tech stacks, and there's definitely products that are, how did you put it, have a bit of history at Xero. And that's for reasons like, I mean, Xero's been around for a minute or two and has got to market really, really quickly. So, you know, the stuff that was built a long time ago that probably isn't ready to consume React. And so some of the things we'll do to get around that is provide the HTML and CSS parts of the system, which are far more tech stack agnostic, I suppose. So teams can consume the styles on more of a view layer without so much of the functionality. But we also have teams at Xero whose job it is to support teams modernizing their tech stack to get them to a position where they can consume the system.
Yeah, that sounds great. And it's also, yeah, great to know that you also have a CSS including in the design system. So yeah, great to know. And the other question during your introduction is that you mentioned you use Figma as the design system. Like maintaining tool, is that like cross all the teams, like everyone, every designers and developers, how it works, like in general way?
So all the designers use Figma, and we use that for creating our high fidelity mocks and some of our sort of simple click through prototypes. We use it for design reviews and for working with development. We find it really helpful because we're split across so many offices, and in fact, especially now during lockdown, any sort of tool that can help us collaborate better or work more asynchronously but in the same kind of environment is really impactful for us. And so Zooey provides a library that every designer will pull into their design files, and then within once they're consuming the library, they have a list of all of the assets that are available from that library. And the library we put together as the Zooey team matches what is built in React and code. So that's those fundamental styles, the components, and page layouts. And so we try and keep the, we do keep the code and the Figma library in sync with each other. What that means is designers can bring in components from the Figma library, put it into their mocks and their screens and prototypes, and then when it's time for them to work with development, it's really easy to see how this design might translate into product, I suppose, into a working product.
Yeah, that's Chris, for my understanding, like Figma is a designer's tool, but how it works with the developers. Like, of course, I used to work for something like where you can update this the design system file as a master file. So when it updates, everyone gets the latest version and add the notification.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, but that's for the components. It's really easy to understand. But how it works for the coding, for the codes and like for developers, how is it the same way that works?
Yeah, essentially. So, I mean, when we build the library, we have to do that manually as designers. So we look at what's in code and we essentially copy that. So everything in Figma is just a visual representation of the real component that's in code.
Oh yeah.
And so as we release updates to Zooey, the code repository, we visualize those same updates in Figma. And so in terms of how do developers consume those changes, they basically need to update to the version of Zooey that they want to use. So if they're on 16, which is a major release that a lot of teams are on at the moment, when we release 17 next week, that'll introduce some breaking changes and some really impactful benefits and heaps of Figma updates actually, but teams will have to decide to update to that version and then amend any of the changes that release has caused them to need to do in their code base, which used to be a big deal for us because we would really theme those releases and make huge changes each major release. So for example, Zooey 15 focused a lot on responsive behavior, and that's when we introduced page compositions and simple things. Buttons would stack and sheets would appear at mobile instead of drop downs and that sort of stuff. And what that meant was that teams upgrading to 15 had a lot of work to do because it was a drastic change. And we had a lot of work to do in Figma, but now our releases are more frequent and less drastic, so it makes it sort of easier for everyone to update, both in development and in Figma.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that totally makes sense. It sounds like a SaaS product, like SaaS product.
Just keep updating
every, yeah, like a small step, but more frequently. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Figma the first choice, or is it like you use some other platforms or other tools and then re-platform to Figma? Because a lot of companies use like Sketch and Zapling and maybe InVision Design System Manager to manage all the components. So how it works, like, do you use those tools before? And why do you choose Figma as the new tool?
Yeah, good question. We've used a bunch of those tools in the past, and I think they all have their place. It just really comes down to how your organization works, I suppose, and what the designers feel most comfortable with and where you see your design operations going. So I think they're all awesome tools, and they all have their place. We used Sketch and InVision. Some people were using Zeppelin in the past, a couple of years ago. Just as I was starting, actually, a few of the team were experimenting with Figma and decided to make the move across. And for a little while there, we were using a few different tools. And as the team grew, it sort of just became impractical, you know? So as we moved to Figma, we found that we could use that in place of sort of a handful of tools. You know, InVision's great for sharing mocks and getting feedback and stuff like this, and that's, you know, baked into Figma. So we use Figma for that. And, you know, the developer collaboration side, Figma handles pretty well as well. So, you know, not a huge need for Zeppelin for us anymore. And we found it's worked pretty well so far. In fact, you know, there's been a few really cool moments with the multiplayer feature where, you know, I've popped into a file to, I don't know, maybe give a couple of tips or, you know, see something interesting that a designer was showing me. And there were 26 people in there. Wow. 26 people in one file. And, you know, there was a couple of product managers, a product owner, a few product designers, obviously someone from systems, and a couple of engineers. And, yeah, they just felt quite special to just see firsthand that many people collaborating in the same tool. Because, like, we all work in such different disciplines, right? It sometimes can be really hard for these different disciplines to be in the same medium.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think the tools are quite there, because we still have these stark contrasts where, like, designers are building static mocks and developers are building the real product, I suppose. And there's this, like, big discrepancy between what's actually built, you know what I mean, and what's designed. Like, one shows intent and the other one is the real deal. So I think it'll be interesting to see where tools go to cross that bridge, or, I don't know, merge those two processes. But at the moment, we find Figma works pretty well for us.
Yeah, actually that started a very great topic, like what the tools will go in the future. Because, I use Sketch and Figma and Figma for personal project, and Sketch while work. And Zeppelin, InVision, those type of the tools, and also for the collaboration, like Miro or and Slack. So all these tools, and my ideal or the perfect tool for designers to collaborate is like Figma with Miro with Zoom together. So basically, it's like everyone can comment and write note and we can see each other's mouths where they're pointing at, and like we can share, here's the point, here's something we can improve, here's something is great, and then take some notes and also record, like we can do it with simultaneously, remotely, like as a Zoom meeting. So now it's like all separated, so you need to
open those on that screen.
Yeah, so, and sometimes it's really not a good experience when you share the screen on Zoom and then zoom in, zoom out, so different resolution of the screens. So that could be, but I think something I've learned about the lockdown or about the pandemic situation is that it's really accelerate the how we work remotely, at least 5 years ahead of what we used to be. So I think that could be something really, really good to know, and looking forward to see some newcomers to this market. So it could be quite interesting to know. And yeah, so that's really interesting. And yeah, and another thing that I want to talk, because we'll talk a lot specific as questions about Zoe and about design systems, so I want to take it back to a personal level, because some of the designers and may not get used to design system, because it's normally work for large companies or for a big group, a large group, and how it could be helpful for small teams or small companies. And sometimes ask a clear question. For example, if I'm a designer working a team and we don't have a full-time design system builder or a system designer, so how can I build a design system, and why should I build a design system if I've also got a lot of things I need to do as a designer, and what's the value it can bring to me as a designer in the team?
That's a really, really great question. I think, firstly, I don't think there's a sort of one size fits all solution with design systems, right? Like, it really comes down to what products you're trying to make, how your team works, and the sort of challenges you're facing at the moment, right? Like, I think there's really inspirational existing systems out there, like, you know, obviously Salesforce, Material, Atlassian and stuff, and these are really aspirational, but that level just isn't necessary for everyone, I don't think. You know, I think for a small team, they're probably already doing a lot of things that might be considered parts of design systems, you know, pattern libraries and style guides. There's nothing new for designers or engineers. I think where some other aspects of design systems might be helpful is just recognizing where laborious tasks are being done over and over again, and making those simpler and more systemized. And from a design perspective, that's becoming more and more simple. And it's sort of like, that's how a lot of these tools are enabling us to work anyway, right? Like sketch symbols, Figma components, like it just kind of makes sense to make use of these things. But where there's laborious, repeatable tasks can be systemized, I think that's a great way to do it. And that can just be done as you go. I think you don't need a design systems team to create a component. You know what I mean? The third time you've created the button the same way and had to make a lot of subjective decisions to end up in the same place or somewhere different, not on purpose, you can just quickly create that component. You know what I mean? And chat with the engineering about keeping those things synced up, because chances are an engineer's built a button once that they're going to be using instances of too, right? So the other thing I'd say is only go to the fidelity that you need to. If you're seeing gaps in communication or common challenges appear over and over, there might be a place where you introduce, I don't know, a little bit of documentation And that might be in a Google Docs. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be your company/systems.com.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're small enough, it might be about putting a post-it up in between a couple of computers and just trying to fill those gaps and close those open loops of common questions and common problems. And I think you can just sort of do it as you go along, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
and then there's a difference between. Oh, sorry.
You continue. Yeah, you go.
There's a difference between like working in a small product team and say working on a short-term product as well, right? Like if you've got something you're working on that needs to go out the door in 2 weeks, then the sort of things you'd think about systemizing or making common solutions for would be far different than something that is going to have a few people working on it for the next foreseeable future, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally makes sense. Because if we think as a design problem, if we think design system is something we will be useful for a project, I think as a designer, we need to make the decision, like, is it worth to build a design system at this stage for my project? For example, an extreme example is if I'm taking part of a hackathon for a weekend as a designer, and you're going to build a design system for that project, that's crazy. That's totally not worth to do that. Just mark up with something you can find or some previous example. But if it's a long-term project, and also like if it involves a lot of different people, especially some collaboration, like if it's just one team with five designers all sitting in an office, probably just as you mentioned, like post-it notes could be enough to share like the specs, the patterns or all the things we need to take care of the design. But if it's like the communication level is much higher, like different offices, different teams, and it could be used this one, the design system as a universal language, so everyone can communicate with the proper, we can all talking about the same thing, so not different understanding. So that's should be the value of
100%. Yeah, I think so. And the same is true between disciplines. You know, if you can create a language that anyone in a team or organization can use, then you just get rid of a lot of those gray areas and a lot of those, you know, the time spent in conversation just to all get onto the same page. You know, you don't have to do that so often. And then there's also the like how that confusion might manifest. Do you know what I mean? So designers created some mocks and they hand that over to development and walk away. Yeah. Chances are those things aren't going to look too similar. And something like a design system can help facilitate those conversations. But also it means, you know, the common UI elements that the designers use exist in code. So they don't have to keep asking those questions and checking hex values and maybe getting them slightly wrong or eyedropping that gray and adding to the 94th gray on the homepage and just keep eyedropping the latest gray, for example, which is something I've seen a handful of times.
Yeah, totally. That's the pain. And I've been there, the same. And that's great too. Yeah, I think that's really makes sense. And also you mentioned that for the small teams, it could be good to observe what is the work was doing like again and again. Like if it's like repeated or duplicated work, and that definitely could think about how we can create a pattern for that work to make it simpler next time. And in that situation, probably not worth to design a design system just for the design system. So it's not from the top to down, probably from down to the earth level. And if it's repeat again and again, and we can create something and can use it next time.
I agree, because you know they should always be living things and evolving, and so just start with the most impactful changes, I think, and repeatable tasks probably a good one.
And speaking of the designers, and you mentioned that in Zero like the design system team, the designers who work in design system team is called system designer or design system designer. How you call that?
I mean, the jury's out, to be honest, but we're all considered product designers Zero. But then for recruitment, at the moment we're using design systems designer. There's plenty of other names out there. I've seen systems advocate is another one, or just systems designer.
The reason I'm asking this question is that there are two follow-up questions. The first one is that because when we see system designer, it's kind of like similar as architect or IA. Could you, like, if I'm a not working a tech company, like just a random guy and don't know any context about what is a system designer, and first time I hear this title, could you explain it to me? What's the difference? Like, if it's an architect, or is it an architect, or is it like a designer for the system? So, what could you? Make an example or explain it to someone.
Yeah, sure. You made a really good point there. For a little while, when we were looking for designers to work on our design system, we had a job title out in market called systems designer, and we were getting applicants for architect, and engineering focused architecture. Corporate internal management systems, like all sorts of random stuff, which wasn't what we were looking for. So that's why we changed it to design systems designer. It's repetitive and doesn't have a great ring to it necessarily, but it gets the point across and the candidates we've had that have been applying are looking to be designers that work on design systems. So it's working for us for the minute. But was your question more around what does a designer do who works on a design system?
That's actually what I really want to ask is how could a junior designer or someone just graduate from design school could be a design system designer, and actually what a design system designer do every day? What he or she usually do day to day, daily.
Cool. There's obviously a lot of crossover between a product designer, UX designer, UI designer, design system. There's the core stuff that everyone needs to have, which is like, user empathy, research skills, a keen eagerness for collaboration and that sort of stuff. I think with design systems designer, some of the really crucial elements are accessibility. So like web content, accessibility guidelines, all designers ideally would need that, but they're certainly crucial for someone working in design systems. Interaction and UI design, really good skills in here. So a sound understanding of the principles of design and like usability heuristics, micro interactions, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Responsive design, inclusive design, systems thinking. This is a sort of crucial one, and it's something that, you know, some people just have out the gates, but others might learn over time. And that's just, I don't know, it's an example. If the hover state of a button changes by this value, what is the relationship between that value and other components on hover, for example? Or, you know, for example, if it's like a, if you're just using lighten on a particular color, can you then apply that same lighten value in other places and other components on hover state? Or if the color for a button on hover changes to another tint in the palette, what is the relationship between all color palettes, so that if a button's made in this color, we can use a tint from the same level for that button on hover, for example.
Yeah.
So that's like the kind of micro level of systems thinking. And then there's the macro level. If we make changes to this flow, how does that impact the entire product, given that it also might be used in these sorts of user experiences? And also, where do we want the system to go in the future? So that's a really good skill to have, and something that just comes over time, I think. And then I guess this is going to sound really cheesy, but like a growth mindset, I suppose, because design systems are kind of like, they're in between that real design world and engineering world, right? And both of those disciplines, or whatever you want to call them, move so quickly that it's important for us to kind of be out in front a little bit. And so, you know, you'd really want to enjoy technology and design, I think, and enjoy where the tools are going, and enjoy how we might solve for some of these gnarly problems in different ways, and just sort of keeping up.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it's not only just the macro and micro point of view, but also like need to ahead of the product strategy in a few steps ahead. So yeah, that's quite sounds quite a challenging but exciting role for designers. And and if you are like, this question could be tricky, but if you are you are already a hiring manager, if you're going to recruit a design system designer, so what kind of the competencies you are looking for? You also mentioned this this part, which is great, like empathy, detail oriented, and accessibility, interaction design, things like that. How would you measure this competencies? Will make the decision to hire a designer, to recruit a designer to your team? Like, are the things they are looking for during the portfolio or job interview? What will you ask or looking for?
That's a really good question. You know, a portfolio and a job application is essentially a design task in itself, right? And so if the designer understands the competencies that are expected, which any good sort of job ad should explain, then their portfolio and application should show that they've got those competencies, right? And so that would be through giving firm examples. That would be, you know, that could be a PNG, it could be a video, but it most certainly should include a story. You know, why does this look this way? What were the challenges you were trying to solve? Who were the users? Did you speak to them? What did you learn? What was really challenging? What would you do differently? That, you know, that sort of stuff. So there's the hard skills, which you can never really tell just from a static image. And so here's a black and white tip. If I get portfolios that are just really nice looking UIs on Behance, they're not very likely to make it into an interview because we've got a lot of applicants and there's just too many questions at that stage. You know what I mean? Very easy to put together a pretty looking interface, but without any context, it's great. It's almost like graphic design though, you know what I mean? Which is awesome too, but that's not what we're looking for. So I guess it's like telling those stories would be crucial.
Yeah,
I hope that answers the question. I feel like I might have gone for a bit of a rant there.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's a great answer because it feels like not only for the design system designer, but also for a general product designer, that could be a great tip. And I know for some, like for the UX designer, which myself is a UX designer, and normally when we prepare the portfolio for the job interview or get update the portfolio, it's always the most important part is to prepare the story, like the context of all the decisions you made during the 100%. Process. Yeah, so that's because it's so totally agreeing that it's so easy to quickly mark up some good looking interface. Because there are a lot of great examples, and if you have zero constraints, which means that you can make the 100% perfect image, and like the interaction or everything, it just depends on your personal skill. But if you work with a team, they are totally. It's a different story. Like the constraints of the platform of the feasibility, of the accessibility, and all the things. So you need to consider you need to balance all the things. So that shows how a product designer, his process of his design process, and that's more important than just show a graphic like an image. So I think that could be quite useful tip for the graphic designer or the UI designer who want to work as a product designer. So be prepared for the context and story behind the design should be critical for the performance.
Yeah, 100%. And like, you know, you want to hire a person who is going to really love their job, and so. To use systems as an example, so much of that is collaboration and community and talking to people and you know, speaking to this person saying, oh, hey, have you spoken to them? You're working on something similar. And if all that is shown in a portfolio is a really beautiful UI without any other story, then that person might not really enjoy the systems job. It's something that I might think, because that's not what it is. It's not just creating. Yeah, really beautiful UI.
Yeah, that's totally me. Yeah, I think that's a great tip from this conversation, and I think everyone who's listening to this podcast will validate this assumption. Like, we need to prepare for the story behind the design and get it ready. Yeah. And this conversation is more around design systems. I just had one last question about design system. Is before that we talk a lot of pros, a lot of advantage and how it works, design system, how it works, and also about Zoe and about who want to work as a design system designer, how it could be. If we take a step back in a larger picture, could you give me like an example of how a design system really help the team in a general way that can improve the performance, no matter to fill the gap between different designers and developers or between teams. Is there like a really simple or easy understandable example for someone who doesn't familiar with design system, like before design system and after? So what's the difference? Is there a kind of story that you can share, a kind of example you can share?
Yeah, so this is going to be a kind of extreme way of putting it. So teams without design systems don't all work this way, but to sort of paint the picture, I've worked places where there would be 20 designers working on different parts of the product, right? Mm. And a user would use all of these different parts of the product. But each one of these designers had to find out, what's the gray background we use on our page? Oh, it's that one. Let me eyedrop it. What size is the button? Oh, I saw one that's about that size. I'll create it. I'll pop it here on the screen. I need an icon. I quite like this one. Let me grab that and pop that into my UI screen. Meanwhile, the other four designers are doing the same thing. And they're not all going to choose the same gray because it depends what they've eyedropped. They're not all going to choose icons from the same icon set necessarily. Mm. Furthermore, when these designs are handed over to developers, the developers might then go and build a button again, put an icon in again, define this gray by whatever hex value the designer's given them again, and then repeat that process for the next page they're designing. Where a design system can really help, you know, with pattern libraries and style guides, is that there's a library of buttons. There's an existing library of icons. There's an existing library of the grays and which one we use for the background color of our page, for example. And so when a designer is going to put together their interfaces and their experiences, they know, okay, I need a button here. Click and drag. There it is. And all those designers now are using the same button. Same with the icons and same with the colors. Now that they're using those same elements from a single library, when they go and work with development to build it, there's also a library of grays, you know, any sort of color palette, an icon set, and buttons that those developers are using too. So they're using instances of the exact same thing. And what that means is, if you imagine the first world, how much time is wasted making subjective decisions about the same question over and over. And then what does that mean for the user? When they go across those different flows, everything's a little bit different and they have to kind of relearn what they're doing. If you think about the second example, a user learns what a button looks and feels like once and feels familiar through the rest of the site. And also it's quicker to build. Was that high level enough?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great example. And also, I feel resonate because in my previous experience, there are quite similar scenario. Like, for example, if I'm as a designer doing a quick markup for some project, and if there's not available accountable resource, I didn't have the chance to get any like the logos or the colors or from somewhere. Probably I would just pick up the logo from the website, copy and paste. So this is, I think it's just like if you don't prepare the proper tool or the proper material, people will try their own way to get something, and it's not something you want, or it's not something like countable, but it's just a self-invented ways to make it work. But it's not in general, it feels not the consistency, and it's not, the quality is not the same. And also like another thing, while you're giving the example, I'm also thinking about a Chinese story or Chinese saying, the blind man and elephant. So it feels like if a blind man, a group of blind men, they'll just try to figure out how an elephant looks and just touch different parts of the elephant, and if it's on air, on air or on nose, so it's they just have different conclusion, like an elephant should look like this, but actually it's the whole picture is not like that.
That's really
so
interesting.
Yeah, different parts. So I think I just came to that in my mind. Yeah, and I think that's a great example, like you mentioned. People will figure out by their own, and if you have a like a universal, like one single truth resource, so they can use as a universal tool or as a universal language, so everyone will share the same thing and talk the same thing, and that's the if everyone can use that, it's definitely can improve the performance and the workflow, and that's a good example.
Likewise, I think, you know, there's a couple of things I would like to add, is that it's about, in my opinion, it's about getting the common things right and the common things shared. I think it's really important for designers to select their creativity, you know what I mean, and really solve problems that are not constrained inside this little box of set rules. But those should be the things that are unique to a particular experience, you know what I mean, or unique to a particular customer. It's really important to be creative, and I don't think the system should ever cover 100% of a product, you know, 80 maybe, but it's about getting to the point where it makes sense for the designers to really flex that creativity quickly, and the system gets them there quickly, I think. And so with that, was the one thing I didn't add to that example, which would be remit of me not to mention, remit. The system is not just a pattern library, right? There's guidance, and there's support, and there's process, and there's that cross-discipline, that cross-platform kind of nature too.
That's awesome. One last question, because I don't want to take your whole afternoon for this.
I'm enjoying it. Great.
That's good. Yeah, that's great to know. Phew.
I could do this for hours.
Relax. Yeah. So could you recommend some resources, like books or podcasts or websites, if you want, if anyone want to improve their design skills in general, maybe, or if they want to improve their design system, design skills, is there any resource you can recommend?
Yeah, definitely. One book I saw come up on my suggestion recently is one I read a long time ago that I found really impactful, which was The Design of Everyday Things. What's his name? Don Norman, I think. That's a fantastic read, just about how we think about building simplicity and or complexity, you know, into our experiences. Don't Make Me Think is another classic one. Is that Steve Krug? These are for sort of UX design generally. For systems, there's a lot of great folks out there. I think, obviously, Brad Frost, if you're getting started, the book Atomic Design is a sort of cornerstone of design systems to an extent, I suppose. I'll maybe send you a bunch of links for the show notes, but
that would
Ethan
be great.
Marcotte, Responsive Design, the classic. But generally, I reckon find products or designers or engineers, just people that you like and whose work you admire, and track down what they're writing, track down what they're tweeting. That's a great way to hear humans' opinions on things that are happening today. You know what I mean? If you follow someone you admire on Twitter, even when everyone's writing stuff in Medium, and you know, track down a podcast with someone that as good as you, Bear, and they'll have a bunch of awesome guests to the list too. Design Details is a good one. The list goes on. And just one moment, I've got something which hopefully you can chop this out, but products you enjoy will often have like a dot design website. Mm-hmm. Or a Medium Medium publication. And Xero has a Medium publication, I hope you can edit this out as I remind myself what it is. Mm. Humans of Xero.
Yeah.
So a lot of our designers have written some really insightful articles in there, be it about, you know, some UX testing we did on the system, or working with product teams to research to working remotely.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that track down the people you like or the product you like about what they say about product design. That's a great tip, because reading classics are a great way. Is a great way. Mm-hmm. Books and other classics, or taking online course, or mm-hmm. learn that formally. But yeah, at this stage, like, everything just happens so fast and keep changing a lot. And also it's good to learn something systematically, like from the fundamental mm-hmm. level. And totally agreeing, like design of everyday things, don't make me think. These great books are really helpful. Take some proper time to read it, but also keep the pace with the trend. That's also quite necessary. And small steps, that will be very helpful. Like follow some great designers' Twitter or podcast, Medium articles. Mm-hmm. That's all the great way we can learn. Yeah, thanks, Zach. That's a great, a lot of insights from you, lots of insights, and really appreciate that. Is there anything you want to mention or anything you want to share before we close this?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say that Xero is always hiring. So if you're looking to get into UX design, or, you know, move into systems or anything like that, be sure to check out our careers on LinkedIn. And for grads, we have grad programs in Australia and New Zealand. And we're working on a Xero dot design site soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But aside from that, just want to say thanks for having me, Bear. This has been really fun, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this one as I am. If you want to learn more, please check the show note at our website, podcast.bear.academy. If you are listening via Apple Podcasts, please leave a comment for it so there will be more people can find this show. If you feel like to share your story or to be the guest, please check the site for details. Bear Academy is a self-learning program providing courses on design, productivity, and career. If you are interested in start a design career, please check bear.academy for the free course and other useful info. Bear Academy Podcasts is my second podcast, and my first one, Bear Talk, started from 2012, which was Apple's Editor's Choice Award winner in 2013. It is also recommended by many Westerners as the best non-language learning podcast for Chinese learners. If you can speak Mandarin or on learning Mandarin, you should have a try. Check beartalking.com for details. This is Bear Academy Podcast, a podcast about design, productivity, and technology. I'm Bear. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon in the the next one. 再见。